Hello again and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, the podcast where two best friends and TV writers dish, riff, and diss all of life's problems. I am one half of this podcast, a guy who, because it's the end of the year as we record this, is even more checked out than usual, Daniel O'Brien. And I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Soren Bowie. Soren, make like a pop culture reference or whatever and introduce yourself humorously.
Hey, everybody. I'm Soren Bowie, out here dissing those moments of life that need dissing. Did you, what are we dissing, Dan?
It looks like I said dish, riff, and diss all of life's problems.
Yeah, I'm dissing life's problems.
Yeah, so we just like, someone comes to us and they're like, my cousin wants to borrow money from me and I don't know how to talk to him. And we roast the shit out of him.
Oh.
We're like, you have a cousin? You sound poor. You know, that kind of thing.
It feels kind of good to even the concept of dissing my problems. If there's something that seems big and hairy and unmanageable, that I just fucking lay into it, make it feel bad about itself.
Okay.
I might like doing that. It's not what we do on this podcast by any means.
See, I thought you were teeing yourself up to do like
a roast.
That's like. You know, like I would like to diss my problems, and I'm like, and the audience are listening,
and then I would do it.
Yeah.
No, I have no plans for that.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, as you know, this is the show where Soren and I ask each other questions and give each other answers. But this is a very special Christmas episode, or a very special holidays episode, or a very not special filler episode, depending on how you view things. Where we're actually going to take questions from you, our listeners, whom we love very much at a distance. Before that, we haven't checked in on quarantine life lately. Soren, do you have any updates?
I laid into it last time when my dad had COVID during quarantine. But
either last time or next time, depending on the order in which we release these.
That's true. I have a family member who got COVID, but he's just fine now.
Great.
How's yours? How's your COVID going?
I've tried to get into baking because I've always been very bad at baking, and it's just like one of the things that I put on my list instead of, because I've been building a list of things to get mediocre at instead of just like really getting great at Italian or really getting great at playing bass. It's like, what if I was like kind of shitty at two dozen things, and baking is on that list, and I am just fucking failing at it.
I don't know how you can be bad.
Everyone I talk to about baking is like, it's just follow the instructions, and that's probably true, but I disagree.
So the difference between baking and cooking. Cooking is like a very sexy thing because it's like you have to have this sort of emotional intelligence for the food where you're like, the recipe doesn't call for this white wine, but I'm going to add it because I know that this will enhance the flavor palette or the flavor layers.
Palette's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you can kind of improv your way through it. Baking, you cannot improv your way through. Baking is like you do it right or you fuck it all up.
I think it's because I've been cooking since I was like 13. I've been teaching myself to cook and learning from my mom how to cook and just like cooking for so long, doing it that way, very improvisationally, that's given me this strange confidence with baking where I was trying to make these blueberry crumbles the other day, and I'm following the instructions, and they're like, now put one egg into this flour sugar mix, and I'm stirring it in, and I'm looking at it, and even though I've never made this recipe once in my life, and I know nothing about baking, I still find myself going out loud, that doesn't look right. I'm going to put another egg in there. I'm like, I don't know where that comes from. I was wrong, by the way.
So I'm a bad cook, proficient baker. And you know why?
You like following orders?
Love it. I love having rules for me.
Yeah.
Somebody else setting the rules for what I am not allowed to do.
I tried making apple turnovers, and it was such a fucking disaster. My apartment smelled great.
Yeah.
But like, and it's the kind of thing where you can still eat them because it's, the combination of ingredients is still correct, but they were just these weird golden brown failure nuggets that I was like, I can't.
Well, you started pretty high.
I can't bring these to Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
I did, yeah. I started really high.
You could have just, I mean, like cookies are a nice base. Like that's a way you can really get into cooking, but I mean into baking. But you went for like the Maserati of baked goods.
Yeah. Well, I think there's, I've always been attracted to challenge and attracted to like things that are maybe a little bit old school and maybe a little bit off the beaten path.
Like Maseratis.
Like being a, like bringing a date, a rose on the first date is like, oh, that's kind of, that's not done anymore. What an interesting thing. And showing up to a party with an apple turnovers that I made myself is like, oh, this guy is from a different generation. That's sort of the vibe I try to go for.
Bring it over on some fine china then, Dan. That's the way to do it.
Huh?
Bring it over on some fine china.
Oh yeah, you bring dessert over on the fine china.
Oh boy, to somebody else's house, that shows some real courage.
Yeah, and then you're like, yeah, just wash it, get it back to me whenever.
When the next time we see each other.
Thanks so much to Hawthorne for supporting Quick Question. Hawthorne is a premium tailored personal care brand that's making it easy for guys to feel and smell their best. Take Hawthorne's quiz today and get started on your personalized self-care routine by going to hawthorne.co with promo code QQ to get 10% off your first purchase. Let's get into the show in this episode, because it's going to be either our Christmas or our New Year's episode, and we like to, it's our second year in a row of doing this where we just go to questions that you, our audience members, ask us. So we're going to jump right into it. This is from Jax, who goes by @big_tap, T-A-P-P. What books are you guys reading? Have you read during quarantine? Also, plus one for spicy sweet chili Doritos. What?
Oh, yes. This is somebody else who likes spicy sweet chili Doritos.
Oh, is that a thing we talked about on the show?
Yeah, the purple bag of Doritos that are no longer in stores anywhere. The ones that taste like soy sauce on a chip.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah.
Jax, you're great.
I'm reading two books right now, which I know bothers some people. But
how can anybody people get pissed off knowing you read two books?
I think, yeah, well, I imagine that people are like, no, like pick a book and read it and finish it and then start a new one.
What a how crazy thing to have an opinion about.
Have two things in your brain at once. Maybe people aren't mad about that. I just assumed, because I think it's strange that I do this, but it's.
People just see you in the airport reading one book and they see another one in your bag and like, no, fuck you. Fuck you.
I'm calling 911.
Pick one. Where are the police?
I need to have like two books going at once, because I love reading, but if I finish a book, it's difficult for me to start another one. So it's nice that I already have one going. And at the moment I'm reading Claire McNear's Answers in the Form of Questions. It's a Jeopardy book that, like, rest in peace, Alex Trebek. Bizarrely, coincidentally, that book came out the week he passed, like maybe 3 or 4 days after, and I'd already had it pre-ordered on Amazon from back in August when I heard it was announced. And it's great. I really like it. I love Jeopardy so much. Claire McNear is a fantastic writer who's written for The Ringer for a number of years. And the other book I'm reading is Rachel Bloom, friend of ours, her series of essays, I Want to Be Where the Normal People Are, and it's incredible. She has always been one of my favorite thinkers and comedians that I've ever come across, and it's very frustrating that she's such a great actress and singer and songwriter and showrunner, and she's also a fantastic essayist. It's like, you know, pick one.
Yeah, she is one of those people who's good at everything.
Yeah, I can barely speak Italian, lady.
She's so charming and
good at all these things.
Person too, like she's like a good conversationalist too. In a way where you're like, whoa.
Yeah,
this person can talk circles around me. Yeah,
yeah. We had a just like a casual lunch with her once, where she's out of nowhere came up with this. It's still one of my fucking favorite bits of all time, which is. An app that tells you who was in Cool Runnings.
Yeah, that's
it's
all
not
does.
IMDb. It's not Wikipedia. It's specifically an app of who was in Cool Runnings. And she invented it off the top of her head. It was just like something that came up in casual conversation. And then she went on this extended riff of what that app would be and do and what the commercials for it would sound like. And she's just, ah. And it's one of those things that we're not going to make that app. We're not even going to make a sketch of it. She's not going to make a sketch of it. It's not going to be written into a thing anywhere. It's just like one of those free magic comedy gifts that is just for like, here, this is just for us right now. This is just like some fun that we're having right now in this moment.
It was so perfect and polished. Yeah, yeah. It was really great. And the idea of a Cool Runnings app that only tells you who's in Cool Runnings is it's just genius. Are you done with your books, Daniel?
Yeah.
Okay. So I rarely read for pleasure anymore with children. I read books to them. And my son is at an age where I read chapter books to him and he can follow. You know, that's like there's a great achievement unlock where you get to an age where they no longer have to see the pictures that go along with the story. They can just sit there and listen and then they picture it. And it's like, it's not a thing I thought about until recently when my son could finally do it, when I was like, oh God, that's such a big step forward. They're like, he's telling the story in his own brain.
Oh, that's nice.
So we read recently The Mouse and the Motorcycle, which, do you remember that book at all when you were a young kid?
No.
Okay. It's about a mouse. The little boy lives in a hotel. And the little boy has a motorcycle, and the mouse can magically ride this toy motorcycle. Like, doesn't need gasoline or anything. Just can ride it around. And he, at one point, has to save the little boy. And it brought back a lot of memories from reading it when I was a child. And it's great. It's a really good little chapter book. I also started, and you'll hate this, Daniel, Harry Potter.
Oh.
I mean,
look, people enjoy what they enjoy. I think I personally, I don't feel great about supporting J.K. Rowling.
Yeah.
That's me.
Yeah.
That's why from the beginning, I've not read or watched any of the Harry Potter things.
You could just tell.
I had a sense. This is an adult woman who says the way this world works is a hat decides what class everyone is in. No. I don't like this.
It is really funny to read the Sorting Hat stuff and like hear about the different houses and how clearly it is that there are good people and bad people in this world. Right. And that's just the way it is. And we're just sort of going to sort of accept that the bad people also get to go to school with the good people.
Right.
Even though
this is what you are, the hat, and by extension, the author has decided.
My son was like, just talking to him, I was like, well, what house would you want to be in? He was like, Gryffindor. I want to be in Gryffindor. Like, fucking duh. Like, all the other ones, there's either the nerds, there's the fucking pushovers, and then there's the evil kids. Like, why would I want any of those? I want to be with the good guys. Anyway.
Which are the... I thought they were all nerds.
No, there's one called Ravenclaw. Yeah, hate that I'm the expert on Harry Potter on this podcast.
That's the nerd one?
That's the nerd one, yeah.
And pushover is Hufflepuff?
Yeah.
Okay. Is there anyone... How far into it are you?
Well, we read the first book. We're into the second one now.
Is there anything redeeming about Hufflepuff yet? Has someone emerged where it was like, ah, his skills at sucking shit really, really paid off. It helped slay that dragon or whatever.
Well, that's the other thing is it's not like the book's not written all that well because there's clearly a character in the first story who should be in Hufflepuff, but they're like, well, it's going to be inconvenient because they got to encounter him a lot and they wouldn't be in the same house. So we're just going to make him a Gryffindor. There's a character named Neville Longbottom who's like very clearly a Hufflepuff, but they're just like, oh, fuck it. We'll make him a Gryffindor for this. Hermione Granger should be a Ravenclaw. She's not. They're just like, well, it's so hard to make the book make sense. So we're just going to give them all these archetypes within the Gryffindor community as well. But it feels like there are other solutions. Anyway, there is a book called The Goblet of Fire, where there's the kid who's the best in the school who's supposed to win at this whole Goblet of Fire thing is a Hufflepuff.
Okay. But so far there hasn't been an opportunity where Gryffindor was like, we are limited with our experience. It's time we turn to like the baking school or whatever, Hufflepuff.
Yeah, no, they haven't turned to the pushovers for help yet. I don't know that they ever will.
Have you read your son or daughter Avocado Baby?
No.
That's a book that I'd never heard of in my life. And then back in May, I was at my brother and sister-in-law's house, and I was helping put my nephew to sleep, and he wanted to read a book, and he picked this book, Avocado Baby, which seems like it's from 200 years ago, but it can't be. But that's like what the illustrative style looks like. And it's very short, and it's about this family that has a baby, and the family is very weak, and they have this baby, and they look at it and it's like, oh shit, our baby's weak too. This is terrible. We will never advance in this world. And then the mother starts feeding the baby avocados, and the baby gets so strong. And we see the baby like lifting furniture, and then like I think by the end the baby just like fucking beats the shit out of some bullies. And then the book just ends with this terrifyingly strong baby in this family. And I'm like reading it to my nephew and looking at my brother in real time as I'm turning the pages, and I'm mouthing, what the fuck?
I'm looking at it right now. This is great.
Hawthorne is a premium tailored personal care brand that's making it easy for guys to feel and smell their best. Hawthorne is a fun and convenient way to get super high quality products tailored specifically for men. They give you free shipping on your order, and if you decide you're not satisfied with your product, they'll even give you free shipping on the return and give you new suggestions based on your feedback. Hawthorne has a quiz that you can take so they can figure out what makes the most sense for you. I took their quiz and they recommended a bunch of products for me, and I took a bunch of them. I got this big tan brick of soap that I love. I got this hand soap that I really enjoy. It makes my hands smell like I've been chopping wood. I've got two colognes. I've mentioned this before. There's a cologne for work and a cologne for play. And listeners, you know I wake up every morning, I put on a suit, I spray that cologne right in my face, and then I put in a solid 9-hour workday. When that's done, I scrub my face down with that big honking brick of soap, and then I immediately spray the play cologne, because that's right, it's playtime. The tie gets loose and the juice gets juiced. So you can live like me and do those things that I just said. Take Hawthorne's quiz today and get started on your personalized self-care routine by going to hawthorne.co with promo code QQ, and you'll get 10% off your first purchase. That's HAWTHORNE.co, promo code QQ. Let's get on to the next question. Faithy asks, if your writing industry didn't exist or wasn't an option for you for some reason, what do you think you do for a living? Would love to hear your answers.
I'm not the type of person who should have anybody who's like, oh, I like the stuff that you do. Can I ask you some questions about your work? Because I'm constantly insulted by the simplest questions. This one says, if your parentheses writing industry didn't exist, like, are you guys, do you consider yourselves writers? Yeah, Faithy, I do.
Let's, because I don't have another word for it, let's just say that you're a writer. You're not.
This isn't Faithy's fault either.
It's something else.
Like, I'm sure this is a completely, perfectly nice person who is like asking a very genuine question, and immediately I take offense.
This is the kind of question, it's a, I'll figure out what my answer is, but it's something that always comes up in, it's not to say that Faithy is boring or common or low, but it's a very frequent question for actors and actresses. It's in like every interview I've seen for 100 years, where it's like, Chris Pine, if you weren't an actor, what would you do? Because it's a reasonable question to ask if you want to talk about something that's not movies or whatever.
Yep.
I love the question because so many actors will say usually one of two things. One of them is like, I'd probably just be working the land. It's like chopping wood on a farm with all these animals, just like wake up early, just like do some honest work. And the other version of that is something like, I'd like to think I'd be a therapist. Like it's right. Either a job that doesn't really exist, like the vague idea of being a person who tills the land,
yeah,
professionally and like lives comfortably doing that, and not on subsidies, or this thing that requires a tremendous amount of discipline and time and money and education and study. There's rarely a middle ground. Like almost no actor has been like, oof, I don't know, I would fucking tread water for a while,
yeah,
and hope I got hit by a police car and could sue the state because that's my only skill set other than being an actor.
Yeah. Well, let's see, Faithy. I'm always struck whenever I played golf recently, and I'm always struck at what a spectacular athlete I am whenever I play something. I'm always like, oh yeah, I'm great at all of these sports. There's nary a sport that I don't excel at. So I'm thinking that I would
probably... You know what's wild is that I and the audience can't tell if this is a bit or not. That's what your brand is.
I would open myself up to the draft for NFL and for MLB, and I'd see which one was hotter, like where I, location-wise, what sort of city I could go to, and then from there it would determine whether I played baseball or football, or maybe both.
Okay. I mean, I think sports would only work for me. Like, I look at Luka Doncic, and like, he's going to be the next face of the NBA, and he's like a slow, doughy white guy, and I'm like, okay, yeah, if it works for him, maybe I'm good too. Who knows? Maybe I'm secretly the future of the sport.
Yeah, I think that if my industry didn't exist, it would be some other form of it. It would be like, I'd be a copywriter for instructions for building furniture or something. Like, yeah. Just a copywriter, I guess.
Yeah, it's weird because when I started my first job at Cracked, like when I was growing up and into college and like starting to think about what I'm going to do with my life, our industry didn't actually exist. Like, right. Like the industry of online writer, editor, sketch performer wasn't a possibility. Like, it wasn't on my dream list of jobs because it hadn't been invented yet. But then I got it, and I got it while I was still a senior in college, and just like immediately started working. If I didn't have that, I know that I didn't have a plan at the time. Like, writing was in my brain at that point as something that I wanted to do, but until Cracked took a chance on me, I had no plan to seriously pursue writing because it didn't seem like a sensible thing to do. I think when I was a junior in college, my honest to God plan was probably continue in school, like graduate and then go to grad school in something, because student debt was constantly looming over my shoulder, and I just knew, like, as soon as I graduate, they're gonna want me to pay them for 4 years of not preparing me to have a job, and I don't want to do that. So my plan was truly to just kick the can down the road and study something else, and hope that in my further studies, I would develop a passion for something, lucrative.
Wow, or that's a gamble.
Or I would just like keep staying in academia forever.
Yeah, you're good at school. You want to go back to school?
Yeah, I was like, okay, I'm 21 years old now. I think I got the hang of this. Let's really do it. Let's really do school.
I feel like I could make enough money in a small winter town to be a snowboard instructor.
Okay. That would be fun.
Although I'm not realizing, last time I went snowboarding, I tried to teach somebody who had never snowboarded before, and she immediately broke her arm. So maybe I'm... I need to work at it a little first.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't your dream at the time. I think whatever I would end up doing after college would be solely in the pursuit of paying off debt and being able to breathe, because that was like my primary concern for much of my early life. Like, I hear about people who are like, oh, I would take a gap year and travel and figure stuff out. I was like, no, I would find it. I would move in with my parents and like do data entry somewhere. And once I was free of debt, then I would like, okay, now what do I want to do? Now that I've paid off all my debt, who am I?
If there was a celebrity who gave that answer in a press junket interview, that like, do something sensible where they can make enough money to pay off debt, I would be furious.
Really? are you furious with me?
No, because you're my friend.
Yeah.
And I think you're absolutely, and I want to look out for you, and I want you to do something sensible. But like, if Chris Pine was like, I think I've got some debt, so I'd find something where I could just keep my head down, push a pencil for a little while, and get through it. I'd be like, well, fuck you. That's not a good answer. You had all kinds of time to think about this. I'm sure everybody asked you that question.
I think people ask
therapist.
That question. Yeah. I think people ask that question because it's a good in to like, what is your hidden talent?
Yeah.
Or what is your secret interest? Like, they want someone to say, oh, if I wasn't an actor, 100% I would build rocking chairs, or I would be a famous chef or something like that.
Right.
And I could lie.
Yeah.
I could say, I was like, oh yeah, if online internet comedy didn't exist, then I would be in a rock band. Right. Sure.
Trouble is, I'm not good at anything else. I'm barely good at this.
I know. I'm not either. I didn't say I know. I know as in like, I know you're barely good at this. I know as in I'm agreeing with you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I think that's answered. Our next question is from Z Doctor. Since I followed you guys from Cracked, your personality and dynamic is so different from on screen there to here. Is your podcast personality your real one or just another character?
I sometimes walk away from these podcasts at the end thinking, I revealed too much about myself.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And I'm like, I don't like how personal I get on this podcast sometimes. So this is as real as it gets.
Okay.
And everything else is scripted, by the way, that we do.
Yeah.
So it's easy to build a character around it. This is much truer to who I am.
I think I'm half and half on this. Like, part of it is... even though I'm talking to you, I'm talking into a microphone and I know it's being recorded and I know people are going to listen to it. So there's some element of character there. I'm still like doing something that it, like, this isn't how I am with my family or close friends or anything like that. Like, you're like, I'm like a very boundaries conscious person. So I'm never going to reveal too much or get too personal on this podcast. The parts that do feel the most real to me and the largest betrayal of the character from After Hours, the character from the columns that I wrote, whenever I get mean. Like, I think when I'm at my nastiest and like a little bit of bully comes out of me, that's like, oh, that's a real part of me that I worked very hard to hide from the public. I think there's we've mentioned this before on the show, but I think about Oh Hello on Broadway with Nick Kroll and John Mulaney, mm-hmm. where their close friends, people who knew them, said that this is who they really are. Nick Kroll, in his heart, is like a chaotic little baby. And John Mulaney, a very nice person on stage, in his heart is like this is where he gets to be mean.
Yeah.
And there's a part of me that like the mean part of me that
hasn't been nourished with your entertainment career.
and I feel it come out sometimes on this podcast. I'm like, I think I'm not sure people will like that. But if you don't like it, ignore what I said. That's part of the character that I'm doing now. Podcast Daniel is mean. Daniel, the author, is exactly who you want him to be. Buy my books.
So yeah, I don't think you come across as mean on this podcast, Daniel.
That's good.
I think you're a very nice guy. And I occasionally think that maybe I bully you on this podcast, and
really?
I feel bad about that.
I don't actually think so. I think one of the things that has come out of this podcast that I'm pretty happy about is the softer and kinder and more supportive side of you that wasn't allowed to shine in After Hours or your columns, because you were very much steering into the skid of this character that made sense for you. And I think with this podcast, everyone gets to hear like, oh man, he's like a super sweet and kind and good friend. I want him to be an asshole, and he's not. And that's very frustrating, which is what our listeners would be saying, which, you know, I agree with you. But I like that they get to see this version of you that I've come to know. And on the opposite side of that coin is they also get to see this, like, nasty, cranky version of me that you've come to know.
Okay.
All right. This is a long Twitter name. Scott, why am I in this wicker basket? Paladin, who is at Scott Paladin on Twitter, says, if you were allowed to pick any song for your personal intro music for parties,
work gatherings.
We didn't read these questions in advance. For parties, work gatherings, and the like, what would it be?
So I get to, basically the same way a baseball player, when they step up to bat,
yeah,
they get their own music. Yeah. What would your...
This is your Careless Whisper moment.
Yeah. Your theme music be. I want to have a good answer, and I don't
that. I'll just talk about a couple of things while we both think. My friend Matt and I hosted our high school talent show, and he's like a big, tough looking fella, and has like a real dark, like heavy metal energy, and he set up a vertically positioned coffin in the center of the stage that he hid in, or like placed himself in, and then had a bunch of fog machines going. There was a lot of fog going through, and played the wrestler Kane, his theme music from, at the time, WWF Raw. It's like this big, scary, dramatic, monstrous music, and it comes out, and there's like Kane comes out and there's a big explosion, and at the explosion time, Matt kicked open the door of the coffin and like walked out with his arms outstretched and brought his arms down, and the lights changed. And then I walked out from the side of the
outstretched
stage.
Outstretched like a zombie, or like outstretched for like a hug?
Outstretched like in victory, like out in the air.
Oh, up, fist in the air.
Up and out.
I was picturing directly at a 90 degree angle to his body, like somebody under a spell, or like just looking to be picked up.
No, he very much took the stage like, I'm scary, I'm in charge, I am owning this moment. And then I walked on stage from stage left in like a horizontal striped shirt, smiling and waving at the crowd, which was like a very like, which was by design. He was like, I'm gonna have this cool big dick entrance, and then you walk out smiling and waving, happy to be here, and that's going to be the dynamic for our job as hosts of this thing, which is the closest I've ever come to having theme music. And now that I've stalled enough, Soren, have you thought of an answer?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, great.
Goodbye, Horses.
Is that what is that? I don't know that song.
It would be nice if it just like started playing. Have you ever seen the movie Silence of the Lambs?
Yeah.
And the
Buffalo Bill?
The Buffalo Bill song. So it's a song that has clearly been adopted by pop culture, and it has this, like, it serves like this one very specific purpose in our pop culture. Outside of that, it's actually a really great song. Mm-hmm. And because it has all this other crazy context to it, that seems so inappropriate for an average person walking into a work gathering or whatever, I think I would really enjoy how funny that would be. And then I genuinely like the song too. And I think that you could win people over with it. I think people would like laugh, and then they'd be like, fuck, you know, this is a banger.
I think I would probably pick Biz Markie's You Got What I Need.
Oh yeah.
Because everyone loves the chorus of that song.
They will sing
it's
along.
Very fun, very fun sing-along chorus. The verses are just utter trash. He is not a good rapper. His story goes nowhere. It's one of my favorite songs in the world because in the second verse, he talks about, it's okay to have friends because I have friends. And that's a fact. Like Agnes, Agatha, Jermaine, and Jack. Forget about that. I love someone who introduces, who like isn't forced to, but introduces a plot point and then says, ignore what I just said. It's like Biz Markie and Elton John and Bernie Taupin in Your Song. Those are the only two people who are like, who change their mind mid-stride and try to get you to forget about what they just said. It's a fun move and a garbage song that I want people to... It's my entrance music, so we'd never get to the chorus.
Right.
It would just be...
Just for you.
Have you ever met a girl?
We...
And, like, people would be so mad. It was like, oh, I gotta hear Biz Markie talk rap until Daniel gets to his desk, and I fucking... This is the worst part of my day. But then I know that song is gonna come up in your life again. You'll be at a karaoke bar, and someone will do it, and I won't be there, and you'll think about me, and you'll smile.
I've had the opportunity to come out to a song before because I've been married, and generally what happens in a marriage is that you do all the business of putting the rings on the fingers, and then later everyone walks over to the reception and then they introduce the new couple and they get to come out to a song. Do you remember this, Daniel?
I remember it from weddings generally, but I don't remember the song you guys came out to.
We came out to Exhibits X. And it's such a heavy, big song that is completely inappropriate for the context.
Her choice?
Yeah, of course. And it also starts with, today's the first day of the rest of my life, which felt very apropos. And it's a really, it's just like, it's such an inappropriate song for almost any circumstance. And that's why we chose it. And I think that that would also be a very fun one.
Yeah. All right. Great question. This one is from Kimmy Esk, who goes by Scribbleth on Twitter, I guess. These are all like at names, so I'm assuming Twitter. LA question. For Soren, what do you love most about living in LA? For Daniel, what do you miss most, other than Soren, about living in LA?
Oh, see, I like this person.
Yeah. So answer their question.
Oh, okay. I think, I need to be in a city. If I was to live in a small town again, I think I'd go a little crazy. I grew up in a very, very small area. I didn't have neighbors growing up. I lived like in the woods. And if I had to go back now to a place where I didn't feel like I was culturally plugged in, I would have a very, very tough time acclimating to that. So the fact that it feels like LA is the first place that things happen a lot of times, like within the entertainment industry, it's harder now with COVID, but like, music, like there's a lot acts, like if there's a new act that's up and coming, they're going to come to LA first. That's one of the big places that they will hit. So it feels like a cultural hub. And even if I'm not always partaking in that culture, I'm still there. And just being in proximity to it, you catch a lot of it and it feels very nice.
Yeah. Culturally, you won't miss anything. There's never like,
yes,
this new indie film opening in Milwaukee and Little Rock.
Right. Yeah. So we've got Lemley theaters all over scattered throughout Los Angeles that are anything that's not going to be a blockbuster hit. Like it comes to these Lemley theaters. So you're going to get to see anything you want to see. Again, not during COVID. But then I also love that the proximity to the outdoors. I mean, you get the same thing from a city like Denver. But New York, it's very tough, I assume, to get, if you wanted to like, you're like, let's go camping. What's the fastest you could actually get to a camping site from New York? It's going to take you hours, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. In LA, it's actually a lot easier than that. LA, you could get to a place that doesn't feel like LA in about 45 minutes. You can get up into a completely different habitat. By the way, the habitat of LA is called Chaparral and it's dog shit. It's just like spiny plants all over the place. They all look dead and dry. But getting out of that, you just drive up north on the 2 for 45 minutes and you're up in pine trees. It's beautiful. You feel like you're in a real forest. There's ferns even. Like it's very easy to get out of that. And so getting out of the city when you feel like you need to is also very easy.
That's probably what I miss most about it. Apart from the very obvious things of friends and the weather. I really miss, like, I'm going to just get in a car and either go to the beach or go to a mountain or go to the woods somewhere or go to a desert somewhere. It all felt very quick and very easy. And New York, I mean, I still have a car here and it's not like it's a city forever. Like, New Jersey's close, Pennsylvania's close. Upstate New York is very lovely, but it's still the simple act of, like, leaving Manhattan is a stressful endeavor in a way that leaving Los Angeles proper was not. Like, you can get in a car and the traffic is fine and you go somewhere, versus New York, it's like, I'm still in this fucking city where every driver is insane, and I hate that.
Yeah.
I also think about LA that I miss, that I am surprised by, is how comparatively quiet it is.
Yeah.
To New York, because one of my issues when I was living in LA was that I was starting to feel like it's too loud here. Like, I didn't, like, even in my Westwood area, which is, like, not a city or anything like that, it still felt like I'm too close to the road. I want to be farther away from things. And now I miss that a lot, because it's never quiet in New York.
Right. That's a thing I didn't think I needed in my life until recently. Maybe it's because I've gotten old, but, like, I don't feel like I need to feel the pulse of the streets.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and it's like, LA is sprawled. So it's, they don't build up, they build out. And yeah, it's kind of a big problem in terms of transportation and pollution and everything. That's why LA is so gross. The sky is so gross above it. But you have to drive everywhere because it's so spread out. But because it's so spread out, there's actually room in a lot of places in the city. I live currently on a cul-de-sac that very much feels like just a small town. And it's because it's technically suburbs of Los Angeles. And I think as a kid, that would have driven me crazy. But as an adult, I love it. I love having a place where I can go out in the middle of the street and teach my son to ride a bicycle.
Yeah.
And not have to worry about cars.
All right. Good question. Next one comes from @tally_burger. Quick question. If you could have a burger made in your honor, what would be on it?
So, like, people would go to the restaurant and they'd order a Soren?
Yeah.
Yes. This is my dream, by the way. I want to be so well recognized at a restaurant because I patronize it so much that they name something after me there. That's like, when I found out that Chuck Klosterman had a Witty Chuck that you could go to a bar and order, I was like, I want that. For my life.
Do you know
that's
what
the American dream?
Witty Chuck is?
Yeah. It's brandy and ginger ale.
Oh.
Yeah. He says that it genuinely makes him funnier. It unlocks these, for some reason, that combination unlocks certain things in his brain and makes him a better conversationalist and makes him more fun to be around, which is probably why he suffered from some alcoholism when he was younger.
My answer isn't a burger.
Okay. Well, perfect. That's right off the bat.
I'll try to think of a burger while I'm talking about this. There was a diner that I think is now closed called Town & Country that was in Hazlitt, New Jersey, that I used to go to all the time with my friends. It was sort of like an unfunny, unscripted, unglamorous version of After Hours, where we would just sit around this diner and talk about pop culture and eat and drink coffee way too late. And I would get... I can feel my stomach hurting thinking about it now. It's fried buffalo chicken and bacon and blue cheese and ranch inside of a wrap. Like a burrito of just bacon and chicken and two different poisonous white creamies. And I would eat that and also dip it into ranch. And
this feels like cultural appropriation somehow. I don't know how yet.
Of what culture?
I don't know. This is buffalo chicken inside a burrito with a bunch of other sauces.
Yeah.
Okay.
And bacon. And the first few times I'd ordered it because they did like plenty of wraps there. I had to specify, like, by the way, no lettuce and tomato. I know that's standard with your sandwich wraps, but I don't want anything resembling a vegetable.
No rabbit food.
This decision that I've made. And I would get that multiple times a week because I was 19 and I could do that sort of thing. And eventually, like, got it so much that I could come in there and say the usual. And they would bring that specific thing to me because it wasn't on the menu, which is like a thing that I wanted. And I would like that to be the Daniel somewhere. Not Town and Country, because I think it's dead now. But somewhere I want that to exist, even though I would never have it again in my life. Because I think, like, in my mid-20s, I was back in Jersey for the holidays, probably, and went to that diner with a friend, and was like, for old time's sake, I'm going to get this thing. And I ate it, and, like, three bites in, I was like, it's just sodium. What have I done?
Okay. I would get, so I, the first thing I can think of is there's a restaurant called The Counter, which I assume is national, yeah, where you do make your own burgers, and I always get the same thing there, so fuck it, that might as well be my thing. I would get a turkey burger, because I don't eat beef, and it would have on it a pepper jack cheese, jalapenos, and then a big ring of pineapple on it.
Oh.
Yeah, so you get
there's
sweet and spicy.
There's a lot going on there.
Yeah, so The pineapple is to offset the jalapenos and pepper jack, which are can be like a pretty spicy combination. And then I'm struggling to decide whether I just want regular raw onions on it or I want crispy onions. Because now it needs a little bit of a, it needs another texture to it because we got a lot of mushy things.
I find this to be a genuinely difficult question because I don't know. Like, I've been raised on the burgers on which I've been raised, you know? Like, restaurants offer a burger with bacon and blue cheese, and I really like that decision that they made. But I can't ask someone to call that the Daniel, because that's in multiple restaurants at this point. Like, we are very fortunate to exist in a world where a lot of our burger needs have been already met, so I never had to rely on my imagination. Like, I never ordered a burger and thought, what other possibilities are there?
In our well-documented shared history, you haven't made the best of choices when you have the opportunity, when, like, the sky's the limit for foods. We used to go get salads together at a salad bar where you could choose anything.
Oh, fuck.
And you would somehow walk out of there with melted Jolly Ranchers on top or some shit like that, where it was like, what? Chocolate chips don't belong in a salad, Daniel.
Yeah, I know. I get really overwhelmed, and I don't think any salad bar puts. I think the order is wrong. They know that in the beginning they want a bunch of their greens and stuff, and that makes sense. That's the only good decision they've ever made. But when you're on a line with people and you're just like moving from spot to spot, and you don't know what's ahead, you're gonna commit to something early. I'm gonna put a bunch of spring greens in there, and then I come to the, like, fucking diced mango station, so I get mangoes, and then a few stops later, there's artichokes. I'm like, shit, that was on the table? Well, I can't have artichokes and mangoes, but then, like, here I am spooning it in there anyway.
Yeah, just hoping maybe that somehow this concoction works once you shake it.
Yeah.
That's a fair assessment. Yeah. I think that it's really tough for you to stick with a theme because there are so many things that you enjoy that you're like, well, maybe I'll just be able to pick these things separately.
Yeah.
And you just can't do that in a salad. It all falls to one piece.
You come back to work with a salad and I come back and it's like, I got an egg and some licorice. I don't know, man. Yeah, does anyone want half of this egg?
Back and you would be like, you would look at my salad so longingly because mine clearly had a narrative to it. It was like, this is the genre of salad that I got.
Well, this salad bar was chaos because at the end of it, they were just like loose meats. So there was a very real chance that you would like finish your salad, put dressing on it, and then be like, oh, I guess I need like a circle of salami on top too.
There was also
the architect of this salad bar has decided that it's reasonable for this to be here.
There was the baffling addition of pudding at the end too, which meant that I don't know if they were assuming that you just ate your salad while standing in line, but in the end you were like, ah, dessert, perfect. Or if he was really like, and then you've also left, obviously, a foot of space between your salad and what will be your dessert. And so over here, you'll have your pudding. I'm going to go to
this particular restaurant on, I think it was Wednesdays or Fridays. I can't remember. Salads are priced by weight. And if you correctly guessed your weight in anticipation of the weighing, you would get your thing for free. And I was always wrong. And it always brought into like stark focus when I put the thing on the scale and they're like, yours is $16. I'm like, yeah, man, I don't know. Most of it's chickpeas. and a bottle of Snapple. I really got lost in there. Just charge me. It's fine.
It's five handfuls of sunflower seeds and some bacon bits. I didn't know what else to do. I don't think you should be trusted with having your own burger. I think that maybe I can.
Me specifically?
Yes. I feel like maybe I should be in charge of designing yours. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make one for you right now, and you tell me what you think of it.
Okay.
Okay?
I'm already designing my own burger, and I like it, but go on. I figured this is, it out. Go on.
Okay. This is the Buffalo O'Brien, because I know some things that you do enjoy, one of them being buffalo sauce, and that's going on there.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the other thing. Your meat, it's going to be bison meat, Daniel.
Okay.
You get a nice, rich, lean bison meat. That's your base of your burger. Chopped up in there with the bison meat are onions. And it's like, it basically is like a meatball, like a bison meatball. Like it's like the same texture where you put in like some breadcrumbs, some egg, and some onions. Mm-hmm. And you get those spices inside the burger itself. Then you're getting what kind of cheese do I know you like?
I'm lactose intolerant.
You're not getting a cheese. You're getting buffalo sauce on top, and you don't like lettuce and tomato. You don't want those things messing up your burger.
Yeah.
Fuck, I just made a very, very basic burger for you. Okay, I don't even know what you would want on top now. There's nothing I can think of that you enjoy.
I think so. When I make burgers myself, I'll use ground turkey meat, and I mix it with a little bit of fish sauce for the umami, and then I'll throw in some garlic and goat cheese. That's a cheese that I can have, and a little bit of thyme, and grill that up, and I just put some sprouts on top of it. I might put like a, how does Umami Burger prepare their tomatoes? Is that like a stewed tomato, a pickled tomato?
It's a dried, oven-dried tomato.
Oven-dried tomato. I would put one of those on there, and the sprouts, and a garlic aioli.
What?
I'm telling you, man.
Well, hold on. You don't like lettuce on your burger, but you're gonna have sprouts on there?
Yeah, I like the texture.
Sprouts are just like a hairy lettuce.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I want.
Stuck in your teeth. Yeah. Wilting. They wilt immediately on anything hot.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
This is why you can't make your own decisions. I'm not gonna let you do it. I can't let you do it. You're gonna end up unhappy, and it's gonna ruin the rest of our meetings for the day. Sticking with my buffalo burger for you, and I don't mind putting an oven-dried tomato on there. I think that's a good idea.
Okay. And with that, I think we're out of audience questions. Is there anything we should say to like wrap up the year in podcasting?
That's a tall order.
What do you think? Should we keep doing this show next year? What do you think?
Oh. I just sort of assumed it was over, but yeah, I think we could probably continue.
All right. Well, I'm going to track down our social accounts, and while I'm doing that, we've talked about go-to karaoke songs, and often Soren will pick, like, a rap song, because that's like, it seems cool, but in reality it's cowardly and low stakes. So I would like you to sing a popular song right now, with no music backing you up, and it can't be a rap song. You have to like earnestly sing a song, right now.
Well, the warmth of your love is like the warmth of the sun, and this will be our year. Took a long time to come. Don't let go of my hand now, the darkness has gone. This will be our year. Took a long time to come. And I won't forget the way you held me up when I was down. And I won't forget the way you said, darling, I love you. You gave me strength to go on. Now we're there and we've only just begun. This will be our year. Took a long time to Come, ba-da-da, ba-da-da-da, da-da-da-da, this will be our year. Took a long time to come.
I genuinely, very good, thank you for doing that. I genuinely tried to jump in a few times, yeah. But it was like you were anticipating when I was going to jump in and like and like really seized on the next note, because
that would have been a good bit.
You knew you weren't done.
To do that on stage where the other person's like ready to move on, and yeah. no.
I've what fucking song is that?
It's from the Zombies. They did like a "What's Your Name? Who's Your Daddy? Is He Rich Like Me?" Remember that song?
Yeah.
Time and Season. They have another song that is very not famous at all called "This Will Be Our Year," I think, and it's a great song for this year.
You know the one interesting zombie story that I know? Do you already know it?
No.
Oh. So this is way back in 1960, the past, and the zombies had gotten popular, but because the internet didn't exist, no one really knew what they looked like, and so this guy created a band in America, because the zombies are from England. This guy created a band in America, and was like, "You're the zombies now, learn the zombies songs," and then like go tour around the country being the zombies. And so this band did. They learned a bunch of zombie songs and then also like came up with their own songs and were just like play around being the zombies. They would go and do radio commercials or like radio interviews, and they would sell out clubs and bars and stuff. And this producer or promoter, I can't remember, whoever set up the first Vague Zombies was like, "Shit, I'm going to set up so we have Detroit Zombies, and I'm going to set up like a Southern Zombies, like a Dallas Zombies or something like that."
It's like a Gallagher 2 story.
Yes, there are now three zombies bands. The original only Zombies at that point had broken up. But there are two zombies touring across the country. And every once in a while, someone would show up to a Zombies, in quotes, concert and be like, "Hey, you're not the Zombies, because the Zombies doesn't have a keyboard player." And they're like, he's new, we got him. Or they would show up at a show and be like, "Hey, what happened to the lead singer of the Zombies?" And they'd be like, "He's in prison. I'm the lead singer now." And they got away with the scam for a while until like the actual Zombies returned and showed up and started calling into radio stations being like, "Hey, I didn't realize that you guys were selling tickets to Zombies shows. I'm the Zombies. Stop doing that." And radio interviewers were like, "How do I know?" I was like, I don't know, man. It's the past. How can I prove anything?" And eventually the guy who put these two fake bands together was found out and like fled. He just fucking screwed off because he'd been caught. And one of the zombies, the Southern Zombies, I believe, completely dissolved. And the original fake zombies, they were like, "Well, we can't be the zombies anymore, but we got really good playing together over the last however long this has been, and I like you guys, and we only played like two Zombies songs a show, and then the rest of it was our songs that we'd originally written, so let's just keep trying to be a band now." And that band, ZZ Top.
Oh, what a fucking Paul Harvey moment. That was great.
Yeah. You can find Soren on Twitter at Soren_LTD. You can email the show at qqwithsorenanddaniel@gmail.com. You can find our show on Twitter at twitter.com/qq_SorenandDan. You can find me on Twitter. I've been feeling generous lately and letting people follow me, even though I'm going to delete my account in like 2 months. You can find me at dob_INC. Our producer, engineer, editor, Gabe Harder, has decided to be impossible to reach. I don't even have his email. He's just a voice that pops into this podcast every once in a while we're talking. If you can find him, hire him, because he's very good. Also, if you can find him, describe to me what he looks like. I'm very curious.
That's right. You've never even seen him.
No.
He's handsome. He's a good looking guy.
Ah, fuck him.
Yeah.
I think that's about it for me. Yeah, I'm just checking my notes. Fuck him. Happy New Year. All right, bye.